Vet Voice. River Run. Thanks for the article by Matt Grills on the Coast Guard's River Tenders, June. As they're a part of our national defense that we don't think about. Keeping commerce flowing is critical to our nation, and the behind-the-scenes work these men and women do is seldom recognized. Keep up the good work, Coast Guard. These river tenders are exemplary of your motto, Semper Paratus. Always ready. Tom Teer, Clearwater, Florida. I served on the cutter White Pine, homeported in Memphis, from April to August 1955, when I was asked to volunteer for transfer to the 14th District, which turned out to be 14 months on a Loran station near Busan, Korea. White Pine's area of responsibility was from Cairo, Illinois, to the White River in Arkansas. It looked like a smaller version of the then 180-foot seagoing buoy tenders, Storis, Bramble, Buttonwood, etc. I had some good times on that cutter. Liberty towns like Caruthersville and New Madrid, Missouri, were great, as was Cairo. Thanks for bringing back memories. Richard Pfeiffer, Lakeland, Florida. I'm sure many of us who served, or are serving, in the Coast Guard appreciated Matt Grills' article. Buoy tender duty is just one of the missions of the Coast Guard that many civilians know little about. And like most missions, it can be dangerous. In 1980, USCGC Blackthorn, a 180-foot seagoing buoy tender, collided with a tanker while passing under the Sunshine Skyway Bridge in Tampa Bay. It capsized, and 23 crew members lost their lives. James E. Ferber, Orange, Virginia. I served 4 years in the Coast Guard in the early 1970s, including two on a 175-foot coastal buoy tender. My other duty was on a 210-foot medium endurance cutter. The work done by the Aton teams is thankless and some of the hardest work the Coast Guard does every day. I found my time on the buoy tender to be rewarding and a challenge. I worked on the bridge as a quartermaster navigator. This rate no longer exists. It is rare to see articles of this nature about the Coast Guard and the things it does for our country. Keep on looking for more to report. Scott C. Oldham, Gainesville, Florida. Like a giant X-ray. This is an excellent article about atomic bomb testing, June, and the lack of care for the participants. But these were not just Pacific tests. My brother was at Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas. These men were taken to a secret test area north of the city on at least two occasions to witness the detonation of nuclear devices. I had top secret clearance and was in the Army, so my brother did tell me some of the details. The men were unloaded from the buses and put in trenches. The instructions were to stand up and face the explosion when told. After the flash and the mushroom cloud, they were loaded back on the buses and returned to Nellis. My brother's two closest friends died within 5 years. He himself was treated for cancer and lung problems until he died. I lived downwind of the explosions in southern Utah, and we were told to get tested, and the United States would pay us up to $200,000 plus medical payments. My brother died in medical misery, without any compensation or thanks. Tom Redd, Scottsdale, Arizona. My father, John A. Coveney, a career infantry officer, was stationed at Fort MacArthur, California in 1955. He was required to take his company to the Nevada desert to observe atomic bomb detonations. In the 1980s, my father was diagnosed with leukemia, from which he died in June 1992. Now we know. Kenneth G. Coveney, Alpine, California. Ken Olson's article accurately summarizes the atomic veterans' plight. I have been a member of the National Association of Atomic Veterans since 1979. We have fought long and hard to get the benefits we rightly deserve. I thank the American Legion for all its support over the years. I participated in Operation Hardtack 1 at Eniwetok Atoll, aboard Rehoboth, a survey ship. Our mission was to conduct oceanographic operations before and after Shot Wahoo, a 10-kiloton underwater atomic bomb, to test the effects on submarines and mines. I witnessed 10 shots from 6 to 200 miles away. All hands were issued film badges. We were never told of the effects of being exposed to ionized radiation and fallout. Through a Freedom of Information Act request, I was able to get my film badge reading, Rehoboth's logs and details of the shots I witnessed. Interestingly, my DD-214 did not mention my or Rehoboth's participation in the operation. Knowing I was under a secrecy dictate, I shared my experiences with my future wife and family members. I wanted them to know what I had gone through and how the government was treating atomic veterans. When each of our 3 children were born, my wife and I were extremely anxious to see if our babies had any physical or genetic defects. Thank God they grew up healthy. The public and our politicians need to know that atomic veterans have been wounded in service to our country. However, the bullets were silent and penetrated the human body. Within the past 10 years, I have experienced multiple bouts of skin cancer. The effects of radiation exposure never end. Robert De Blasi, Rockaway Township, New Jersey. Over here. Thank you for the photo of Camp Taylor Park in the article by Mark D. Van Els, June. It was there that I was processed for Navy enlistment in 1968. David L. Bartsch, Louisville, Kentucky. As I age, I find that military history means a lot more to me than it used to. I am proud of my service to our fine nation, and I gladly give thanks to all of those who came before me, especially those who have paid the ultimate price for America. I had no idea so many camps across the country helped our doughboys become war-fighting heroes, and it saddens me we've lost so many of them. The information about Camp Colt was especially interesting to me since I am originally from Pennsylvania. Thank you for making articles about World War I a priority this year as we mark its 100th anniversary. I will definitely be making trips to see these sites and memorials now that I know where they are located. Stacy Owsley, San Antonio. Editor's note, in Legacy Run, 18 July, the city of Spirit Lake, Iowa, was inadvertently placed within the state of Minnesota on the map. The American Legion magazine welcomes your opinions. Include your hometown and a daytime phone number for verification. All letters published are subject to editing. Due to the volume of mail received, not every letter can be acknowledged. The American Legion magazine, P.O. Box 1055, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46206. Magazine at legion.org.